This is IR's Invisible Hand, and I'm Sydney Thompson. Scholars of International Relations, welcome to the pod. This week, we're talking about one lens, one foundational perspective that could explain war and peace and the mechanisms that drive conflict itself. One that could illuminate not just gender inequalities, but the systems that perpetuate them. Imagine a lens that uncovers the root of globalization, empire, hegemony, and even our ways of thinking about justice. Let's get into it. That lens is economic relations. It isn't just an influence on the structures of our world. It constructs our realities, racial hierarchies, gender subjugation, global inequalities. They're products of economic systems designed to extract wealth and power. Systems whose impact shapes the way we live, who we are, and who we aspire to become. Today, I'll make my case as to why economic relations is the meta lens for analyzing IR. Economic relations hold the key to power and inequality. They determine who controls resources, who governs, and who thrives. They define the rules of the game and decide who gets to play. Racial differences were invented to justify economic exploitation. Colonization wasn't just a moral failing. It was a deliberate economic system designed to funnel labor and wealth to the powerful. The same is true for gendered subjugation. Traditionally entrenched divisions of labor that confined women to the home were an economic strategy to both extract value and ensure social reproduction while also keeping women excluded from wealth building and decision making. And these dynamics haven't disappeared. Pay gaps, the lack of women leaders, and racial wealth disparities remain rooted in economic systems. Global inequalities persist as institutions like the IMF and World Bank enforce terms that keep nations dependent. Even knowledge production, that is, who gets to create, publish, and shape global discourse, is tied to the intellectual economy, itself governed by economic relations. Reparations, justice, and the transformation of knowledge systems are all deeply economic. To understand the world as it is and imagine what the future of IR could be, you have to start with economic relations. In taking a look at the other frameworks, let's kick it off with War and Peace. Realism tells us war arises from the pursuit of power, but economic relations reveal the deeper picture, the competition for markets, resources, and wealth. The buildup to war often stems from struggles over access to resources like oil, water, or land, which are essential for both economic and military power. Wars are not just geopolitical contests, but economic battles to secure these assets, making economic relations the root of conflict and peace. Negative peace, or the absence of active conflict, is fragile and unsustainable without economic stability, because grievances from poverty or inequality will inevitably resurface. Also, many wars are avoided due to economic reasons. The economic cost is too high, so countries instead pursue other routes of conflict resolution. Positive peace requires economic equity and interdependence, which treaties like Bretton Woods aim to establish post-World War II through stabilizing capitalist markets and fostering trade. Economic relations are the behind-the-scenes engines driving both the descent into war and the ascent into peace. For law and agreements, liberalism emphasizes the use of international law and institutions as tools for cooperation, but these frameworks are only as strong as the economic interests that support them. Agreements like trade deals or climate accords are not altruistic. They hinge on financial incentives that align with the economic goals of participating nations. International law and negotiation frameworks are reactive, addressing symptoms rather than the structural causes of conflict and cooperation. Consider the global trade negotiations in Odell's work on bargaining, where the success of agreements hinges on financial arrangements that benefit both negotiating parties. Constructivism teaches us that race and gender hierarchies are social constructs, which remains accurate But economic relations shows us why they exist, to extract value and concentrate power. From the exploitation of racialized labor during colonialism to the persistent gender pay gap, these inequalities are not incidental. They're central to how economic systems operate and reproduce themselves. Feminist IR reveals how structural barriers exclude women from leadership roles and confine them to undervalued labor sectors, perpetuating wealth disparities. For instance, the concentration of women in unpaid domestic work is a direct result of economic systems that prioritize profit over equity and social mobility. Racial capitalism highlights how racial hierarchies were engineered for profit, exemplified by the transatlantic slave trade and colonial resource extraction. These systems institutionalized racial disparities, creating a global labor force structured to benefit dominant identities and powers. Modern practices like exploitative sweatshop labor and discriminatory lending policies continue to reinforce these hierarchies. These inequities are not incidental, but instead core mechanisms of historical economic relations that continue to reproduce the allocation of power, wealth, and opportunity. Moving on to class and nation. While foundational concepts in IR, they are predicated by economic relations. Marxism, as a constructivist critique, tells us how ideologies are shaped by material conditions. But Marxism focuses on class exploitation without addressing how global economic systems, like multinational trade networks, sustain the bourgeoisie class. Economic relations provide the missing context, explaining how these systems perpetuate inequality at both national and international levels. Nationalism often masks economic motivations. Trade wars and protectionist policies are less about cultural pride and more about controlling markets and resources. For example, Trump's America First policies that appear to be promoting a sense of patriotism, but are really about a deep fear that the U.S. is losing its unipolar hegemonic market share to China. Transnational challenges, climate change, and globalization are deeply tied to economic systems. Profit-driven models fuel environmental destruction and resource exploitation. Globalization connects markets, but it also entrenches inequalities, allowing wealthier nations to extract labor and resources from the global south. Hegemony, imperialism was not driven by cultural ideology. It was driven by economic interests. Colonizers extracted resources and enslaved people to enrich their metropoles. Post-colonialism reminds us that these systems persist through debt traps, trade imbalances, and intellectual colonization. Empire's foundation always was and remains economic. Even change itself is governed by economic forces. Globalization, shifts in power, even intellectual revolutions stem from economic transformations. Economic relations provide the soft politics necessary to achieve the ultimate goal of IR, which is understanding and shaping the interactions that define our global order. Focusing on economic forces that underlie political decisions, security dynamics, and international cooperation, the lens of economic relations reveals mechanisms that drive conflict and resolution. It explains how resource competition sparks wars, how financial dependency undermines sovereignty, and how trade creates pathways for peace and cooperation. Looking at IR through this framework allows us to analyze and predict the complexities of global interactions while offering strategies rooted in economic stability and equity. Adopting the lens of economic relations is more than an academic choice. It's a commitment to understanding the systems that define our history, our world, and our lived reality. Until next time, thank you for listening, and this has been Sydney with the Invisible Hand of IR Podcast.